Okay, hello everybody and welcome to episode 63 of the Friendly Geordies podcast with Ali Muhammad. No, Ali. Oh, fuck.
Just start again.
Okay. No, sorry. Hello and welcome to episode 63 of the Friendly Geordies podcast with Jordan Shanks.
Hi everybody, nice to see you second time around.
Ali Ahmed.
Hey guys.
Can I do it with that inflection?
Is the right pronunciation.
Is it? Okay.
No, it's not.
It's not, damn it. Just Ahmed.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. Tom Montefiore.
Is that your actual name, Ali?
Yeah, man. Like, that's my...
What's your full name? Say your full name.
Ali... Well, full name?
Yeah.
Ali Shahryar Ahmed. Ahmed.
Right. Cool.
That was pretty short and to the point. As soon as you said, name your full name, I thought, oh, crap, that's the hour of the podcast going.
Hey, you, but okay, so Islamic people don't have really long names normally. It's short and to the point. It's just a more Middle Eastern version of like Mitch, Connor, Michael.
No, well, they can have long names as well. Like, they can have like 15 names added to their actual name. So, like, for example, like most of the people that are named Muhammad, what's fun is that their name isn't actually Muhammad. It's like a pre-name to their name, because most Muslims wouldn't keep their name as Muhammad as their first name because they think that nobody can be as good as Muhammad the real.
So that was,
yeah. It does remind me a lot of there just being one of those long gypsy trailers, but word version of that, you know. Caravan followed by a cage with a lion in it, a bear. Keeping it going. Robbie's not impressed for some reason. Are you just waiting to introduce everybody else into the podcast?
Yeah. I'm trying to do the, like, just for people. I know that we have, like, you know, no new listeners basically, but I just feel like it.
But it makes you feel more comfortable.
Well,
doing
it
this.
Just adds some slight professionalism to it that I just think, you know, it requires.
Sorely needed.
Yeah. So Tom Montefiore said before.
Hello.
Yeah. And I'm Robbie Armfield, and together it's the Friendly Geordies podcast. And look, so last week we ran out of time in the studio, and this week, well, we actually didn't get in the studio. So we're doing this in mine and Tom's sort of kitchen area to this week. And I hope it adds a sort of nice family vibe.
It truly does. It looks like a photograph from Fantastic Furniture from specifically 1992, where you saw that comedian that's now extremely left-wing, Rod Quintock, I think his name is, around the same time that he was the mascot for Captain Snooze. for those playing at home.
Right. Well, so last week we didn't get around to addressing the whole CSL debate, you know, the Camp Scout leader of the podcast, okay? There's been some fervent debate in the comments section. Samuel Troy, Todd Murphy are a couple of names that I noticed. And I just think we should basically put our own horses in the race and so they can have it out. I'll start by just saying that I would like Ben Zeri as this. He is the absolute trailblazer of the Robbie Appreciation Society, that I'm just truly appreciative of him for that effort. I think he's an absolute gem of a human being, and I would like to put him first as the CSL of the Friendly Geordies podcast.
So, hang on, is this... Are we turning ourselves into Greek gods?
Yes.
Is that what... That's what I thought's happening right now. Robbie, you are putting forth the person that worships you the most and yes. Favouring him.
Yes.
Outright. Is that what everybody else is going for?
Well, I'm in support of Todd Murphy.
The guy he plays video games with incessantly, who is an e-friend at the very least.
Yeah, we're virtuals. I think Samuel Troy has done a fantastic job, though. So I think, you know, whoever can take it, I think, you know, it's up to you. But I'm also a bit behind Effie, because I think she's completely right in that it's unnecessary. There doesn't need to be a leader, but maybe there is. I don't know.
Well, I think...
Can you not be an atheist god, not believing in yourself?
No, I think Effie's right. And Samuel Troy, I have to say, you've done a fantastic job up until now. But, you know, you fell off the horse a little bit. But, you know, but now I'm putting forward Ben Zeri. Tom's putting forward Todd Murphy.
But I think it takes great courage from Nick also to be challenging this, so I think go on, Nick, as well.
Yeah, it's one word for it, isn't it? It's also, he's a bloody coward, isn't he? For messaging me. He messaged me surreptitiously being like, hey, I think it's time to put this horse in the race. I want to be the next CSL. I'm like, best of luck to you, Nick. And then I didn't actually say anything in the comments section, and he goes forth and just, I think he said, Robbie can get fucked or something like that. I don't know. But I'm just... I messaged him saying...
Did that make you like him more or less?
I think he's a cheeky bastard and I don't really wish him that well in this race. But
You're such an Old Testament god, aren't you, Robbie?
I really
total
am.
Total raft to those that don't believe.
I wish him the best. You know, he seems like a nice guy. But Ben Zeri is my pick.
There is zero sympathy out of you. I'm going for Samuel Troy. As Robbie pointed out, and I don't think we ever have before, yeah, he fell off the horse.
But what do we do? What do we do when we fall off the horse?
We get back on.
That's right.
Good point, Tom. But I really feel like, yeah, why are you guys so down on him?
I'm not down on Samuel. I think he just...
Yeah, but why is everybody saying, yeah, I think it's time for a new Camp Scout leader? This really feels like... replacing the Keating Hawke government just because they've been around for a while.
Look,
what's the point? He's doing a good job.
Yeah, he's doing a fine job. Yeah, I think it's just...
Who do you think Samuel Troy is, the Hawke or the Keating of the comments section?
Oh, it's a hard one. Probably Hawke. Well, we haven't given the others a choice.
Robbie, having absolutely nothing about even current politics, what do you think about 1980s Australian politics in that context? What do you think he is, the Hawke or the Keating?
I will do the classic media training response of saying what I would like to say in response to that question, which is I think this is sort of like...
Gotta learn somewhere.
I think this is similar like the Shapes flavors, you know, where they're going to put the new one in. Some people might not like it, but you've got to try something. Got to try something.
Okay, so you think that Samuel Troy's your barbecue Shapes, a classic, tried and true, bring it out in the party, everyone's happy.
But yeah, I was saying this
tomato
the other
and
day.
Basil, what's this? What's this? It's not barbecue, is it?
You don't mess
it's tomato
perfect.
And basil.
It's just, it is a perfect shape already. Like, what were they thinking? Like, I know sales must have been down, but it honestly is just like, I can't believe it. Like, it is the most tasty shape, the barbecue shape.
No, tomato and basil, I will put this out on the record. Everybody try it.
Oh, you liked it.
It's great.
I thought they were removing them from the shelves. Like, they've brought a pack back that now says original, the original flavor. Like, so to...
Yeah, your anonymous, oval-shaped, pizza-esque... Is that what we're going for here? No, the chicken one. That's
I think
it.
They just brought...
But just back. To quickly mention this... As soon as we started mentioning Shapes, Ali snatched the microphone out of my hand. He has something to say.
Well, barbecue's the best flavor, which is why... which is why I say maintain the status quo and let Samuel Troy go on. Because only the greatest ever fall off the horse... The person who doesn't fall off the horse has never actually been on it.
That's wise as fuck.
Yeah, it's so easy to criticize, and that's what we've learned.
Church.
Nobody defended him, did they? Everybody just nitpicked him for that one unfaithful time that he fell off the horse that we didn't want to mention at all. But, you know, now that it's out there, we've got to do this.
He's Samuel Troy, the one that fell off the horse, isn't he? Like, if we had to characterize him. Samuel Troy, the man that fell off the horse. And that's a blush. Okay, that's a blush. So that's a new form of poetry I've created. It's called a blush. We talked about it on the most recent radio, so listen to that.
Yeah, so let's not go back into that now because that was very tentatively a new form of poetry, wasn't it?
Okay, so I mean, good luck to you all.
Be honest with yourself, come on.
We'll see how you all go. I don't know. We're not going to get involved in this. Look, you're a rabble. Let yourself work it out. All right, so...
Yeah, we're really more fans of this.
Yeah, we're onlookers. We're observers. It's not really our place.
Yeah.
We'll just Greek have a godlike position. Like,
go Achilles. not getting too heavily involved in this. Maybe just afterwards. In fact, if somebody does take Samuel Troy off of his perch, yes, they're the Camp Scout leader, but much like in the Odyssey, they will be cursed to 40 years of trial. So, put that burden on yourself at your own risk, okay? Now, what's the next segment, Tom?
Next segment is Ali's African Heartland. This week, Brazil.
yeah, have you guys been following what's happening in Brazil? Like the
tiny bit.
No, I haven't been following that. That's why you're here.
The president has been attempted to take her down.
She's down now. So the reason why she's down is the official reasoning is that she apparently manipulated the official budget finances. So she sort of showed some money where it didn't exist. That's what the claim is, and hence they got rid of her.
How did they get rid of her?
They impeached her. Or there's factions. This is what's actually happening, though. What's actually happening is that... right after Hugo Chavez became this big thing in South America, a lot of these Latin American countries were just saying, maybe we don't need to get dictations from America, and we can just form our own workers' parties that can run the country. Which was amazing. And it really helped Brazil and all of the other countries in the area too. But recently, they've not been doing very well economically. Part of the reason why they haven't been doing it is because China has just is now buying less stuff because their economy is slowing down, which means that the Brazilian economy is not doing as well. So they're stuck in that sort of middle income bracket, which is why there's popular support for her to go. But the thing is, they've gotten rid of her on these baseless allegations. She was from like a lefty party, and the right wing just basically orchestrated this coup.
So how is she in a position of power if she doesn't hold power? You know, like if they're in the position where they can just like throw her out, don't they need some kind of like majority or some ability to do that? Like how do it?
It was really difficult for them to do it because first they would say, well, we'll impeach her. They would collect certain amounts of people that would vote for her. The parliament would do that. But some of them would just back out because the thing is, everybody realized that this was just a way to get rid of her. And they were sort of preying on the economic dissatisfactions of general Brazilian people, but a lot of it didn't have to do with her. There's just the times were different. It's sort of like after 2008 financial crisis, just getting rid of Obama because the economy isn't doing well. Like, you can do that if you want, but is it really going to help? And the worst part about it is now that the right-wing government's in, that will do wonders for the economy, I'm sure.
Is that sarcasm?
Yeah, that's sarcasm, 100%.
Comedic podcast.
Need some jokes. So
why did you need to ask that? It's not the internet where you're just chatting on Facebook chat.
Yeah, yeah.
It's very obvious.
Someone might read a transcript or something and need it covered.
In fact, Samuel Choi, if you want to absolutely persevere your position here and enshrine it in gold so nobody can ever take it, make a transcript of this exact podcast, word for word.
Ali, is there... So, I went to Argentina once, right? Yeah. And they...
Wow.
Hipster contributions to international politics.
Worldly. You've been
Did you discover yourself there?
No, So, in Argentina, I'm not going to...
Did you have coke?
Okay, I was in Argentina.
Yes, you did.
And, this was Bolivia. There's a big statue there of Che Guevara, and he's standing on the head of a bald-headed eagle, and, like, everyone hates the US. And it just seems to be a common trend across South America that they just hate the US because they kind of have done so much dodgy stuff with them over the past decades, like post-Cold War, Cold War stuff.
Yeah.
Is there, like, reverberations in Brazil from that, or is Brazil never in the equation there?
No, Brazil's in that equation. In fact, that whole region, including Bolivia, Argentina, Brazil, Venezuela, Cuba. So basically, this all sort of stems from this anti-American hatred. So during the 50s, after the Cuban Revolution, Cuba essentially became like a proxy state for the Soviet Union.
Yeah.
Now, that was sort of happening everywhere around the world, but this was really threatening for America because it was just like in their backyard. So they started screwing up these Latin American countries just to make sure that they don't fall under these, you know,
Nicaragua.
Yeah, like Nicaragua, pretty much anywhere. Like even so now they have certain countries that they would say have friendly governments, for example, like Colombia. But the reason why most people are, including Bolivia is a good example, because they hate the US because of all of this stuff that had been happening during the Cold War. Americans try to like control their backyard. That screwed quite a stuff over. So they have this anti-American feelings. And then during like after the collapse of the Soviet Union, especially during the Bush era, they just sort of put a blind eye towards Latin America because Well, they don't know what to do with it exactly. And also, they were more focused on Middle East at that point.
Mm.
And this was the time when oil prices were just going high and high. So Venezuela, a small country that's rich in oil, would sell quite a bit of that oil. And with the money, they had basically brought their oil companies into public sector.
Mm.
Like, that was Hugo Chavez's main thing. That inspired quite a lot of other Latin American countries to go through the same route, so there was this massive popular movement of worker parties throughout Latin America, which is why most people like me were saying and still are saying that if there's one region where good things are happening, it's Latin America.
The other thing that I love in Latin America is Coca-Cola. It seems. It's everywhere. It literally is everywhere. It's crazy.
This is a current affair point. Going to a protest about globalization, not talking about that at all. They just get some guy to say, yeah, we're just protesting against mega corporations and their like rape of the world. And then go, yeah, well, why are you wearing Nike shoes, mate? Why? That's the only reason why they're covering it,
yeah.
For that grab of, and then to get that guy off kilter, go, oh, because there's no other choice. No, there's plenty of other choices.
Yeah.
Go to Pelopus.
But it does feel a bit like that, how there is this big anti-American sentiment, but like Coke is so massive
there. Yeah, apparently Mexico consumes the most amount of Coke per capita in the world. And it's like in like the huge numbers, like there's a massive difference between, I think the second one might actually be US, but Mexico, and there's a big difference. They love Coke there. I don't know why that is though. Like, I have no good intelligent answer for that.
I remember driving down this road, and for kilometers, it was just Coke, 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 like every single ad across, like, yeah, it's just insane amounts of money. And Samsung.
Did it work?
Yeah, man. Like, yeah, well, you can't drink the water there too easily. Like, so you have to have soft drink all the time. So, Coke.
So, your choices are a delicious brown drink or a gross brown drink.
Yeah.
It's a pretty easy option.
Couldn't tell either way. Yeah.
Harley, just a moment ago, going, I just really don't have an intelligible answer for this.
Yeah. Sorry for bringing down the... Yeah. So, what's happening now with Brazil? Good direction or bad direction?
Yeah, so initially...
Bad direction, it sounds.
Well, okay. So, I don't know if it's... You decide if it's a good direction or a bad direction. But, so during that time, when oil prices were really high and China was booming, there was a lot of market for goods, and then countries like Brazil, they started exporting, their economy got really, they were growing at a phenomenal pace, and they've now reached that middle income country, so they're not as povo as they were.
Technical terms with Ali.
Yeah. Well, they
always... Did you learn the word povo? Sorry to detract from this very riveting discussion, but how long were you in Australia before you started using it, and did you go to POV first? Or were you a fan of Povo from the beginning?
No, I love Povo from like the step. Like the first time I heard it, I'm like, okay, this is going to be part of my usual lingo now.
It's one of our greatest contributions as Australians. If you've got any others, put them in the comments section. But I'm pretty sure that's numero uno.
A best slang term we have.
That's our sayonara. It should be worldwide, that abbreviation. Maybe preggers.
Yeah, preggers.
Or cockatoo. So if you like the term cockatoo, put a picture of a cockatoo in the comment section. And if you like the term prego, put the Queen
a Porto's
Mary.
Prego sauce, put that in. And if you like the term povo, get the slackest picture of someone poor you possibly can and put it in the comment section just to bring the mood down.
Oh, Jesus. So
no support for that?
Oh, well.
Do it anyway.
Yeah, may as well, yeah. They also say that Rio de Janeiro is the Sydney that never was. Like, that they used to think that, like, Rio would be this great tour. Like, it is a big tourist site, but it has a lot of very similar qualities to Australia, Brazil. But it seems to always, like, to just be, like, 10% worse.
Yeah, that's just because...
I don't know who said it, but, like, I've heard it a lot.
Well, Rio is a cultural center, but the reason why it's not like Sydney is because they're not as rich as Australia. They have a huge population that they need to make rich as well. But what's happened in recent times is that... So, initially, with the oil prices high, their economy was booming. They became a middle-class country, which was amazing. But then the oil went down, which was actually just... catastrophic for Venezuela, and because that's what all they depended on. And Brazil, because of oil prices going down, the oil prices essentially went down because there was less demand from China. and which means that there was less demand for other goods. And now they're just in this economic sort of a slump, which essentially 10 years ago meant, or like 20 years ago meant, well, we're going to go for leftist parties. Now, the leftist parties are already in power, but they're still not, like, they're not, the economy isn't doing well, so they're not, now basically, that gives the right-wingers an excuse to just take over the government.
It's just like an opportunity, not an actual, they're not going to, you know, it doesn't, nothing will change, it's just an opportunity to impeach someone.
Why is Chomsky against the, it was the former president that has taken out the one that looks like my deputy teacher from high school. Do you know who that looks like, Ali?
Let's just clarify for people who know Chomsky is a thing.
He's known as the greatest academic of all time.
Noam Chomsky.
By me. Tom, best academic of all time.
He's the most, yeah, publicly known and famous academic,
just
right? Famous.
Sure, that's enough of a description. He's a great guy.
Big, like, anti-Vietnam stand-up war.
Stand-up guy, yep.
Godfather of linguistics.
I imagine he obsessively carries around hand sanitizer.
yeah, very old, close to death.
His wife died recently.
It's very sad.
Looks immaculately clean for an old person, which makes him somewhat more disturbing to look at, I think.
Wears really nice jumpers.
Oh, like, yeah.
Yeah, you'd be a big fan of that, wouldn't you? I feel like you've got a... You're inspired a lot by his jumper sense.
Yeah.
If I could look like him when I'm old, I would be very happy.
Especially because he seems to get more handsome with age. Very ugly and crow-like in his 40s. Mm. The George Clooney of geriatrics, I would say.
all right. So, yeah, what does Chomsky think?
Yeah, why does he not like the former president?
I don't... Does he? I thought that he did like her.
Well, he's saying that, I mean, the Workers' Party of Brazil had a real opportunity to do amazing things with Brazil, and somewhat they sold out to the corporate structure that was there. They've done some significant things.
Yeah, that's, well, he is right. Again, like, every time he is right. But but the thing is, like, I think partly the reason, and I can sort of bring this back to Australian politics as well, like, most people that are in that position of governance at the moment don't really know what to do. Like, they're, most of them are just looking at these small term policies, and a lot of people say, well, that's because you don't have the guts to do anything else. But honestly, let me know what it is that we can do that's sort of major shifting. Now, when Chomsky says that
Project Venus, man,
terraform, bomb Venus.
Bomb Venus.
Bomb it.
What? Are you just throwing that out there?
Get rid of it.
Fuck it, man. What? Where did that come from?
Nah, it's like a thing where, like, if they... I think it's actually bombing Mars. Elon Musk was saying, like, if you were to, like, nuke Mars, you could, like, terraform its atmosphere to make it, like, livable.
Through, like, man, I reckon... Okay. No one could say that Bill Shorten isn't ambitious if he chucked that out in the next 2 weeks as part of his platform.
Yes.
Yeah, let's start a space program. Let's arm it to the shit.
Yeah, we'll become a nuclear nation as well. Yeah. And only use nuclear warfare for Mars.
For space. Not liberal anymore, are they? Not so fucking similar now, you stupid troll idiots.
Well, they haven't done it, have they?
Wait, so what is that going to do?
Hey, well, you wait. He said that there's exciting policies coming throughout the next 3 weeks. I can't think of anything more exciting than his $500 million bonus to the reef.
My really, like, small amount of research on it is that I think the idea is that it creates this really quick greenhouse effect, which creates enough... ozone and, like, enough of an atmosphere that you could then, like, sustain life on it without it being, like, radiated to death.
Yeah.
So, like, through bombing the place, you could create, like, an atmosphere.
Have you seen pictures of Venus's surface, Tom?
No. I don't... It's like a huge... It's like a gaseous planet.
But you could stand on it, right?
I'm not sure. I don't think you could. No. I think it's gas, but it's a really dense gas. But I think it's, yeah.
What's dense gas mean? Does that mean that in kid shows when they're doing cartwheels on a cloud and they're going away from their mum's house to India and back, you could do that in Venus?
Well, like, it's a gravitational body. So, like,
I think it's well known to be a planet where if you were to fall into it, you would just continue to fall forever.
Well, once you pass the central point, though, which is like the gravitational source, you'd like slingshot until you reach the center of it.
But I reckon you'd die before any of that happens. Like, you'll be hot as hell.
Yeah, but there is meant to be this kind of Goldilocks point on Venus where we could... It's like discussed about that could be a place to go where you could kind of live in one of the atmospheres of Venus. Like, it's like you couldn't live there. It's like all poisonous gas, but you could like mine resources.
Do you know where we can possibly actually live? One of the moons of Jupiter already has like ice.
Mm.
Which is probably the best bet for humans if they want to colonize.
Is that Europa?
Yeah.
I love how all the second options for Earth. So scientists go, all right, we've already screwed up this planet. Let's just move on. I've got a really good feeling about this ice moon.
Yeah. Well, it's not ideal. Yeah.
Planet that's the size of 300 Earths, that's just a ball of fire.
Yeah, it's not ideal, but, you know, you got to make work with what you can. So,
yes. Is that Brazil done, or? I don't know.
With a very sudden turn into Venus.
All right, see Josh.
Which is not Ali's expertise at all. Josh, the housemate of Tom and Robbie, leaving as we speak.
No, he's a friend. He doesn't live
That's
here.
Right. Yeah. I don't go here much, but yeah, okay. It's really nice seeing you, Josh, and hope to see you again.
Okay. But you know what it is time for now is, Jed Muhammad Kenna with Ali. It was Jed McKenna with Ali, and Jordan wanted to change the name of it to something. What was it?
Jed Hamid Ali.
Okay.
Purely because, stay tuned, we've got a segment that is purely about Ali's opinions on Muhammad Ali. Are they going to be interesting? We don't know. We have not clarified this at all.
And this one has nothing to do with Muhammad Ali. It's just to do with this guy that we, on the way back from Uluru, I think we might have talked about him before on the pod, but we never spoke to Ali about it.
But it was not a very good chat. It was when Robbie had his mouth taped and we got a woman that he dated before to take his position on the podcast, and she was very scared that we were about to make fun of her in some way and bring up the date, even though we didn't.
We probably should have. Like, why have her on?
Yeah, what was
you know
the
what
point?
I mean? Why have her there if not that?
God, we live and we learn, don't we? Now we know how to best.
Why were you looking so angrily at me? I don't even think it was my brainchild.
Yeah, but you usually orchestrate the more like mean ideas, you know? Like, I'm kind of disappointed you didn't insist on that. All right, anyway.
Very retrospective. You really dropped the ball on this, mate, like coaching someone when they've already retired from the game.
So, essentially, Jed McKenna, for those that aren't aware, I'm pretty sure... So, Jordan mentioned him to us. How did you know about him, Jordan?
As Tom pointed out, after listening to it in the car for about an hour, this is just a really bro version of the Tao Te Ching. Ding, ding. Back in the day when I used to listen to Pickup, that was their Bible, is this spiritual guru called Jed McKenna, which is, instead of the Tao Te Ching where it talks about, be like water, water is flexible, water can move mountains, those kind of really nice metaphorical terms and phraseologies, he'll just say, life is bullshit. Deal with it or fucking die. Who the fuck care? And that really speaks to bros.
So he's American and he's very confident that he's enlightened, and he's very high opinion of himself, doesn't he?
Jed McKenna doesn't have a bad word to say about Jed McKenna.
Certainly not. It did rub Tom the exact wrong way when we were sort of driving to Uluru, but I think...
It's so odd because who else does Tom hate? Quickly, rapid fire, give us three names, people you don't like, Tom. I've never heard.
Delta Goodrum.
Yeah, okay, sorry, I have heard that one.
The Madden Brothers, anything connected to The Voice. I hate...
You're completely fine with The Block, you're completely fine with X Factor, which is very close to The Voice. Yeah. Australian Idol, that's all right. Dicko had his moments.
Yeah, Dicko was all right. His daughter went to my mum.
Mark Holden's
school.
Touchdown rubbed Tom the right way.
Yeah, I honestly didn't mind that. The Voice, I hate The Voice.
But yeah, he hates Delta Goodrum pressing the button with her foot. That's not a touchdown.
I honestly hate that. But yeah, the reason it was annoying. Yeah, we were saying this before. It's just my Australian tall poppy syndrome, I think. I just find it's like if someone is saying that... all right, the example we've been talking about lately is the book Moby Dick. He was saying how like a friend of his studied Moby Dick for his entire life. He's like a professor in like, you know, English. And he was saying how he read Moby Dick and then spoke to his professor friend and was like, oh, I think I... Like, not I think, like I've worked out the true meaning to Moby Dick. And he's like, well, tell me, Jed. Like, no one knows the true meaning to Moby Dick. I've spent my whole life... like researching this and he's like, oh, I think it's this, and then he goes like, oh my god, Jed, like you've worked it out.
Having said that though, you are listening to Moby Dick as you normally do. You don't read
audiobooks. I love them, they're really good. Yeah, so that
his ears are his eyes. It's just like a blind man, even though he does have eyes, they're perfectly functional. He just hates using them and wishes if you were to get one rid of one of your senses, I'm guessing it's your peepers.
Yeah, it's great for driving. I can listen as I drive, so that's why I do
it. You also do it at home. Like you can read if you'd like at home sometimes.
Yeah, I could do it. I just prefer the voices and
great chat, isn't it? Sometimes Tom reads, sometimes Tom doesn't.
Yeah. Look, I do. I don't.
No, okay. But sorry, you were saying with Moby Dick though, because you are listening to it.
Kind of. Yeah, I am.
You think that Jeb and Kenner's interpretation probably is correct?
Yeah, I think he probably is right. It's more just the attitude of being of saying like only five people who have ever lived have ever achieved enlightenment. I am one of them. Like just saying that
nobody
statement.
Has ever figured out the actual meaning of Moby Dick apart from me and the writer.
Yeah, it's kind of like that attitude of being like, "Well, aren't you amazing, Jed?" Like, and it's him saying it about himself. Like, no one, there isn't a soul alive. Besides bros at pickup artists that give this guy any credit besides himself and bros. And it's
but you do give him credit.
Yeah.
You admit that he figured out the meaning of Moby Dick.
Yeah,
the true meaning.
But he hasn't even read the whole thing. So like give him some time before you've like then he would know if he's figured it out or not.
Yeah, I'm only up
to you're gonna
37.
Have to report back to us on this. But I'm pretty sure that Jed's got it right, having never read Moby Dick and just listening to Jed McKenna's opinion of Moby Dick.
Well, let me explain to you Jed McKenna. So let's go past who he is as a person and talk and we'll explain to you his philosophy and what he reckons the meaning of life is, and then you say how you feel about it. What are your thoughts are? Do you want to try and summarize it like we were this morning?
I can't. It's too profound for me.
Right.
But much like Jed McKenna, Tom has figured out Jed McKenna's meaning of life.
Only one man.
Yeah. All right. This is what I reckon he's about. Is it's basically the Tao Te Ching, but in Jed McKenna version, what it is he's saying that every belief structure there is, so say like religion is a very obvious one, that it's bullshit. It's not true. It's obviously not true. It's just a structure to like make you feel good about the world. And he's saying it's not only that, but every belief structure there is to the point of just any thought you might have or any belief in anything, like in like your morality or what you think about, you know, love or whatever. It's just all bullshit. And it's kind of this really like Zen thing of you're trying to find the core of yourself, which is truth, and everything else is a lie. And you're not trying to even find truth. Truth is just the default. You're just trying to peel back all the layers of lies that you consist of.
And as a result, when you peel back all the layers, you realize there's nobody home. You're not anything. There's nothing true to your personality at all, nor is there anything that's true.
Yeah, but this is a road. I do agree with it, but it's a road to destruction, essentially, because, well, he is right.
So the fuck what?
Yeah, that's what he says. He goes, quote to that.
Reality is a black cloud.
No, if that's fine. If I do agree with him in a sense that it's sort of not new, though, but this whole postmodernist idea that everything's relative and then anything that you believe might not actually be true, is certainly not true in the sense that you think it is, then even your personality is an amalgamation of all the experiences that you've had that might be true or that might not be true.
Because he's not even saying it from like a conflicting perspective, like relativist view. He's saying it's just all of it is just designed to like kind of confuse you. Like no person has ever truly become meaningless and had no idea of anything, like just been a vacuum of thought.
No, I think that's a bit, like, I understand where he's coming from, but I think that's a bit harsh saying that no one's ever thought of that except for him. I'm not annoyed by the fact that he thinks he's this mad dude. I know that might sound bad for others that think that he is. I personally don't have a problem with that. But where he is definitely going wrong is that he's figured it out correctly, but for some reason he thinks that whatever he's thinking is absolutely right. So according to his own theory, what he might be thinking might not necessarily be the right thing as well.
Yeah, he does say that. He goes, because, well, you know why this rings of the truth? Because it's the truth.
Yeah.
That's his question.
Yeah, so like, how come that is the absolute thing? Like, how is he so sure that that is the perfect idea that he's looking at? Again, he's looking at it. So when he says that he's figured out Moby Dick, what he really means is that when he read Moby Dick, his interpretation of Moby Dick really coincided with what he was thinking at the point, and that's why he thinks that he's figured it out.
Yep.
Other people have done it differently. They might have been wrong, but he might have been wrong as well. But, like, okay, Tom, when you watch, there's certain movies that you've watched in your life that weren't necessarily the best movies ever made. They were, like, good movies, but for some reason, you have a deep connection with those movies.
Yeah.
Like, for some reason, you think you get it, right?
Yeah.
Like, I think...
Into the Wild.
Into the Wild is one of them.
It's so good. Robbie and I have said nothing for 10 minutes. As soon as I say movies that connect to us, we yell out these, like, not very good films. And that's our contribution to this conversation.
Were you saying that, like, Oblivion is Tom's? Or was that just, like, one that you liked?
No, that's one I like.
Oh, for God's sake.
No, you were just saying one Tom likes.
Yeah, yeah, because we're talking about, like, because Ali was referring to Tom's sense of films. And I know that, like, he loves Into the Wild. So I was just, like, clarifying for anybody interested.
Okay, whereas not you, as...
Yep.
I just went straight out.
This is my favorite film.
Yeah. That's... Okay, wow.
Yeah. But also, may I just guess, having nowhere near as good of an idea as Robbie does of what your favorite films are, I'm going to punt one here. Scary Movie 2.
Yeah, I like that movie. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Better than it probably should be.
The Scary Movie 3 was better than 2, though.
3 was pretty good.
I actually need a vote on this. If people think that Scary Movie 3 is better than Scary Movie 1 and 2, please comment that. I desperately want to know this. This is my personal focus group.
Why do you think... No one else here thinks that in this group.
Well, I saw 3 in the film, in the cinemas, enjoyed it.
Yeah, I think 3 was around the time of us being able to see films like that in the cinemas. You know, I think 1 and 2 came out a little bit early. So that's maybe why people would say 3.
Come on, guys. The director of 1 and 2 was black. The director of 3 was white. Enough said. And you can tell. You can tell.
Okay.
It's so much better. Don't cut me off.
He doesn't necessarily reflect the opinions of any of us in the room.
But I do reflect their inner dialogue.
Well, I know exactly what you're saying about that. Because, like, for instance, yeah, my example is Into the Wild.
Yeah.
It's like, I know it's not the best film in the world at all. Yeah. Like, it's not great.
Yeah.
Really. But, like, I think it's just the context around the age you are when you see it and, like, how you see it. And
exactly,
you have your
yeah.
personal views on
so
it.
So, it's your personality, whatever you're thinking, whatever your interests are, what you're, you know, what you're afraid of, what you want to do. It's sort of amalgamated into the sort of literature that you're either viewing or reading. So, that makes you feel that you get something 100%. But I bet... the writer of Moby Dick, he probably had different ideas in his mind. He would probably say, well, it's the way you want it to be, right? Like, for example, Stanley Kubrick would say that about 2001: A Space Odyssey. What does it actually mean? He has an idea of what it actually means, but he's not going to say it because there is no actually one way of looking at it, right?
Well, that's That was always the biggest thing that had come up in at uni. It's such a uni debate where it'd be like, you know, like, I know you reckon that this is how you read it, but the director of the film didn't actually think this, so he knows. And then people would be like, well, it doesn't matter, though, does it? Like, the director's dead. The director is dead.
That's the decision that you have to make. It doesn't matter. And I bet even for the director, it doesn't matter. Like, just because the director made it doesn't mean that he knows everything that is in that. Like, you make certain text, you make certain literature, and then you realize that there are dimensions to it. Because those dimensions aren't added by you. Those dimensions are added by the reader themselves.
So if you painted a painting of that bunch of flowers and then said, here's a painting of flowers, and I said, no, it's not. It's a painting of your dick or something. And you'd go, no, it's flowers. And I'd be like, well, I have as much a right to say what that painting's of as you do, because the director's dead.
Well, you do. Well, you have a right to say that this painting. Well, but can you explain your chain of thought? If you can explain it in a satisfactory manner, I don't have to agree with you. But if you can make an argument of why that is a dick, then that's fair play.
Yeah, so I think that's what Jed McKenna's getting at. Is he's saying everyone's always is like misunderstood Moby Dick, and this is like it's not like he's not saying I like Moby Dick because it connects with me. I think, yeah, he's kind of saying this is the true reading of Moby Dick.
But I think that's where I have a problem, because I can understand that he thinks that everyone else has read it wrong. But the thing is that there is no right way to read it. Even what you've read, someone else might think that they figured out Moby Dick.
Yeah.
Does that make them
whoever
wrong?
Can argue
yeah,
it the
whoever
best.
Whoever can argue it. Exactly. And again, there's no answer to it. Mm. The person who wrote Moby Dick wouldn't be able to say, well, you're right or you're wrong, because he's going to be thinking, well, I think both of you are different to where I was coming from, but fair enough. That's what I wanted to get going with this book.
Yeah.
So I like his ideas, like in the sense that he is right, but he's sort of... he's giving himself way more importance than anyone should.
That line, yeah, it's always annoyed me that... But, like, yeah, you're right. But it's annoying. I reckon if I, like, you know, wrote something and then someone was trying to tell me what I was trying to do, I'd be pretty annoyed.
It reminds me of somebody in my class sent a letter to Tim Winton, writer of Cloud Street, and said, oh, yeah, so we were discussing it in English class and we think this theme's in it and this theme's that. And then he wrote back and goes... That's not it at all. This, how dare you denigrate my text like this? So he wasn't really like a... Not every writer is like Stanley Kubrick. And I think we can all agree here safely, and I don't even need to hear any verbal confirmation for this, that Tim Winton is better than Stanley Kubrick. Robbie.
Certainly. I mean,
very
easily.
Confidently takes the microphone off of Tom to say that.
I don't think anybody could argue with that for 1 second. But, I feel like Cloud Street was probably overanalyzed to death. I mean, but there are ways. Obviously, it's a nuanced text, isn't it? It seems like. I didn't actually read the whole thing, but.
I didn't read it at all.
Yeah, like it. You can
and
get
it was year 11. That was pretty poor.
There's poetry to it, isn't there? Isn't there, Tom?
Yeah, I listened to the audiobook.
Oh, my God. Oh, wow. Okay.
What a way to end, huh? That's how we move, boys.
So, is that all we wanted to say about Jed McKenna?
Great guy. Check him out. Really good to listen to. Don't listen to Tom.
He just says a lot about what he does during his day. So, he'll say he rides his bike to the park. He'll say that he saw a girl that was very...
That was hot and was into him.
Yeah, into
him. He's a 50-year-old man. And he says that he has no sexual desire for the woman, but why bring her up in the first place?
He then says that he loves skydiving and how, like, there was one at one point that the plane was, like, having malfunctions and he wasn't scared at all. He goes like they all don't get it. And he was like, everyone was freaking out and I started laughing. Who gives a fuck?
It's so obvious. Oh my God, what a king of the bros.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Dying in skydiving. And then the rest of the story is, and because it malfunctioned, I got to skydive for the rest of the day for free.
Oh my, yeah, when you say it like that, it is so much more obvious how clearly he's just trying to talk himself up. Oh, yeah.
But why not a bro be enlightened?
Because it's so against his philosophy, right? Like, why does he care about a girl trying to seduce him? It doesn't matter. It's bullshit, right? Like, why is he interested in any, like, everything he always says is just, yeah, like, why even write the book that he's making? It's like, it's pointless. There's no reason. There's no reason for status.
Yeah, no, but
or
he's saying
or
after that you understand the truth that there is no truth, do whatever the hell you want with your life, which is what he's done. He's written a book about how awesome he is. He's stayed true to his philosophy. Yep. And the book, there is a point in the book where he talks... God, it's just turned into a like a middle-aged housewife discussion of a book. But,
amateurly recorded.
but he's there's two chapters in the book where he's playing Lara Croft.
Tomb Raider.
Tomb Raider. He's playing Tomb Raider and there's somebody sitting next to him talking spiritual jargon gibberish to him, and he's getting pissed off while he's playing the computer game, and he's just describing what's happening in the computer game for most of the chapter. And then at the end of all that, he says, "I bet you're wondering that I'm putting this in for some kind of overall point. I'm not. I just wanted to tell you that I like playing Tomb Raider."
But he is making a point. It's just...
Nothing matters, whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway. Give him a bone.
You get me too riled up. Let's move on.
Yeah. So, wait, Tom. One more thing before we go. Sorry. Okay. Kanye West or Jed McKenna, who do you like more?
Jed McKenna. Kanye West, I find more entertaining.
Okay, let's move on.
All right, now it's time for Tom Says the Darndest Things. And now what this is going to be is Tom's going to pretend to be a little boy, and I'm going to ask him a couple of questions. And so this is like similar to Bill Cosby's show where he speaks to little boys and girls, and he asked them questions, and they just said some crazy things, didn't they? So, Tom...
Have you written down questions, Robbie?
Yeah, I've got some questions here.
He's done his research.
So what... Oh. Hello, what's your name?
I'm Tom.
Oh, and how old are you, Tom?
10.
It's a bit old. It's quite old.
Actually 7.
That's more like it.
What do you think about Bill Shorten, yeah, mate? What do you think about Bill Shorten?
He's pretty cool. He's like my dad.
Why is he like your dad?
I thought he'd be more like your mum. He's got those big boobs, doesn't he?
I don't know. I guess.
Kid Joe is shit. What they want her.
Well, what's your favourite colour, Tom?
Blue.
More of a light blue or a dark blue?
Dark blue.
Okay, that's nice. And what do you want to be when you grow up, Tom?
Fire person.
A fire person? An arsonist?
No.
Who's the king of the Jews?
Woody Allen.
Correct.
Very educated answer for a 10-year-old. A lot of meditation in that thought. Good to see that they're getting more and more precarious as the years go by, isn't it?
Tom, thanks so much for being on the show. You really do say the darndest things.
Thanks. Thank you.
And if you like that segment, just heaps of pictures of Tom in the comment section. We'll bring that back if you like. I enjoyed it. Ali, what do you reckon? Highlight of the pod?
Highlight of the pod. That I think the little Tom might actually already be an arsonist, right?
Holy.
I'm going to go one further. I'm going to say highlight of Tom's life.
Yeah, it'd be up there.
Argentina, dying on a cliff up there. Nah, I've got to say, Tom says the darndest things.
He went full method for this as well. He's all shaved.
Yeah, true. Yeah, like, you know, I go all out in these segments. All right, so getting topical.
The disdain, the utter disdain on Tom's face. He really was flashing Robbie utter hatred throughout that.
Okay, getting topical with Ali on Muhammad Ali.
No, we don't know how long this segment's going to go for, so we're probably going to be padding longer than the actual answer will be.
I'm going to take bets on this. I reckon it will be 15 seconds.
I'm guessing 3.
10.
Ali, how long do you reckon it will be?
30 seconds.
Okay, Ali.
Well, that was terrible. Let's just completely strike him from this betting. I mean, how rigged is that? That's more rigged than saying take a dive in round 2 to a boxer.
Yeah, he gets to decide. All right, so Ali, it's tragic news. Muhammad Ali died yesterday. Do you feel more sad about this because you share the same name?
Than the average person. In fact, Muhammad Ali's wife.
In fact, according to like statistics, people named Muhammad Ali is the average person because there's so many people named that. But anyways.
Very good point.
I know I should be feeling bad about that, but I am not feeling bad about this. But what I do feel like, I guess, sad about is that, okay, I need to make one thing clear. Like, I don't have any love for boxers in general. Like, I've never been into boxing. I just think it sort of ruins you. Like, he did die at age 74 of Parkinson's. I bet that something has to do, like, the amount of hits that he took in his head, like, something has to do with it. But what I do appreciate, and which I am sad for, is, like, he was a real cool civil rights advocate. And like an anti-Vietnam War sort of an activist, which is awesome. And whenever he spoke, because he was from that sort of boxing career, and he could reach a lot more people. And I remember like him just talking about like how the war in Vietnam is ridiculous. And this, I remember this old clip of his where he was speaking to this other white dude from America, and he was saying, well, how can you be so against the war when there's like, there are good white people out there that are trying to do the right thing as well. And he was saying, well, that doesn't make any difference, because if there's 4,000 white people that are coming to you, and even if 1,000 of them are really good people, as a Viet guy who's in war, you wouldn't care about that. And he was saying like how nobody in Vietnam called me the N-word and...
Yeah.
In my battle. So it's kind of cool that he was one of those anti-war voices. And in hindsight, in 2016, we do realize that he was perhaps right about that.
How long was that, Jordan?
I think we were at the 2-minute mark. I stopped counting after a while because I just thought, well, this blows any of our predictions out of the window. I can't believe you had an opinion on that.
Floats like a butterfly, stings like R.I.P.
You saw that on Instagram, didn't you?
That was a legitimate headline in the Sunday Sun, and I think in England. And it just had a photo of Muhammad Ali that said that.
How they bad do is great that? Work.
Can you believe? It's unbelievable, right?
So the Sun,
yeah.
The Murdoch tabloid in UK.
I think so, yeah.
It's why the one they got their best writers there? And we're stuck with coming up Shorten in the Telegraph here.
Well, we had Billy Shorten in the Money Machine or something, wasn't it?
Yeah,
it was
like the
Money Factory.
That's pretty shit.
It was quite bad, wasn't it?
Billy Shorten and the Money Factory.
Floats like a butterfly, stings like an RIP. To the point, edgy. It's got something for everyone.
Yeah.
Topical, respectful.
Yeah.
Daring. The Sun.
It's not respectful. Yeah. It's not respectful, is it, though? Look.
R.I.P. Rest in peace. Come on.
Yeah, but I think it's just...
What would you prefer? Rest know. In torment?
Do you reckon he would like that?
Muhammad Ali?
Yeah.
I think he probably was in that mindset when he was dying that he probably wouldn't... Like, yeah, he'd be fine with anything, really. Like,
he probably
was pretty shaky for like 20 years there, man.
Okay. He'd probably want the best headline, wouldn't he? And I think we can safely say... It's like up there. In terms of headlines, it's like one of the best headlines you can find.
I think you hate it. It's getting reduced to that.
What's more disrespectful? Floats like a butterfly, stings like an RIP, or I am the deadest?
Oh, my God.
I think we've got a champion, number two.
You've put a great horse in that race. I will give you that. I can't. I won't pass judgment.
Maccabi Diva of racehorses, that one. The other one is Farlap. Far behind the record of Diva.
Yeah, okay. Now we're going Theatre of the Mind.
Theatre of the Mind. Okay, it's what we're known for. So now it's time for Theatre of the Mind. It's a segment that we like to call New Caledonia of the Mind. It's where we're all going to pretend to be from New Caledonia, and we're going to see who's the closest in terms of accents.
Are you sure it's New Caledonia of the Mind? I thought it was Theatre of the New Caledonia.
I preferred my one, but I know that you liked that.
Yeah, actually, now that on reflection, I'm pretty sure you said the first one, and then I go, yeah, Theatre of New Caledonia, great. Yeah. Keep it on that. Yeah. And then tried just to blindly. Politely pass that off in conversation as your mistake.
And I said New Caledonian complaints. And no one said anything. That was just fully swept under the rug.
All right.
And I wish it stayed there, Tom. Thanks for sullying this podcast.
So we're all going to be New Caledonia residents working at a resort. And we're all quite frustrated with the tourists that sort of litter and just generally bring a bad vibe to our hometown.
But here's the twist. None of us know what New Caledonians sound like. So, we're all going to speak how we imagine they talk, having literally zero knowledge on the subject. Then we're going to listen to a New Caledonian and, much like Jed McKenna suggests, find out what's true.
Yeah.
Ali, if you'd like to start.
Take us off.
Them these bloody tourists is the big problem for me. It's because... I am also from a French colony, but I am not French. So I might have certain traces of it, but fuck them tooties.
Okay, okay. Adding knowledge in there, I'm still going to go out on a limb here and say that was the most distant.
You might be right, Jordan.
We don't know yet.
I tell you what they do, that over here, they make me look like I hate them all, man.
Oh. Might have to bleep this out. We've just crossed Theater of the Mind with Taboo Tide Road.
Just like hit me, like yeah, how inappropriate this is.
Like a ton of bricks. You should have seen Tom's face.
I didn't even know there was a French. Is there a French thing to New Caledonia?
Yeah, of course. Don't you remember those old ads?
I know nothing about New Caledonia, so that's really helpful. I can't do a French accent.
Well, though, I can't remember you don't remember. Their tourism campaign was second only to Where the Bloody Hell Are You in terms of fame. It was on for years. You could not watch an episode of Saturday Disney while 101 Dalmatians, the animated series, was on without that coming on going, you've got, you know, a spare $1,200 lying around, you little eight-year-old. How about you deserve a vacation? Why not go to the France of the Polynes?
Right, okay. Oh, well, there you go. All right, I'll give it a go.
Welcome to New Caledonia. New Caledonia, the tourists, I hate all the tourists. We sit on the beach and the tourists just got in they take our beach and our sun.
So you think they sound like a French poet?
Yeah, potentially. Like a kind of...
Jesus, okay, so...
Like Fijian French person.
Didn't sound Fijian at all, I've got to say, but on top of that... Robbie, I really hope you've got something for us here because that was two really bad interpretations and one that just is going to be a bleep, I can assure you.
They come to the beach and they say we're going to take...
Okay, you're going to have to bleep yours as well, Robbie.
I love the surf. I love to surf on the waves. And they come in, these white folks, and...
You can't have two accents, Robbie.
I thought I beeped one. That's why I just put two horses in the race. Anyway, and now...
This is rigged. This game is utterly rigged, especially because Robbie is the only one possessing headphones right now, so we have to take his word on who won.
And now-
so we need your help in the comments. Who was the most accurate... But we'll see what Robbie says now for the sake of continuing this.
Okay. It's basically French. It's basically French.
Oh, he wins it then.
Does he?
No,
That's for you to decide.
Okay, yeah.
You in the comment section. As usual, heaps of homework thrust upon you. Just straight extemporaneously as well. We don't set this out. We are like a... quirky substitute teacher that ends up teaching you more than your normal teacher does. Teaches you about life.
And now we're going to finish things off with a spicy little Jordan inspired thing. Do you know what it is? You remember, Jordan? It's Are You a Count Dracula? Yeah.
That's right. So I had a theory purely out of desperation for segments and staring at garlic that one of us here is Count Dracula. And much like the 80s film The Thing that was then turned into a 2004 appropriation that looks shithouse, we are all going to eat the garlic, and if one of us dies, then I guess we will count Dracula. And we're going to have to do it over the next month, so they do have a lot of time to skip town. But on a system, we just hope that Count Dracula will take the honourable way out and die.
And this is one of those ones where Jordan, you feel as though he's just trying to make us do something really awful. So we've just let him be the first to test this week. So he's going to eat a whole clove of garlic. And
really wasn't expecting that. It's the first time Tom has fathomed this new strategy that I'm going to have to... think of some way to stop this from happening in the future. When I normally say the idea... looking menacingly at Robbie, which is what I was doing this time. And then Tom just turns it around at me and goes, you go first, Jordan.
All right, well, let's go ahead. So Jordan's peeled this garlic clove and he's going to eat it. And if he dies, then he was Count Dracula. But if he doesn't die, he's all right with us.
A lot of holes in this theory as well, because your house is very sunny and it is the middle of the day. Okay.
It's going. Oh, he's chewing.
Oh, it's raw.
Ooh, it's raw and he's chewing it. It's a bit of garlic. I think it's a clove of garlic.
This has got to be the spiciest segment ever. This is surprisingly extremely spicy.
This is classic radio. This is classic radio.
Oh my god.
Oh, his eyes. Oh.
It's actually really hot.
Oh my god.
Wasabi! So damn hot, chicken rigoriga. Remember that segment, guys?
Yes.
How much fun was Dare We Smile?
It's really good for you, though, Ali said. Ali said beforehand, he said it was good for you.
Can't wait until this is you, guys.
I'm just going to
make
Jackie not do it.
Don't say this to me now, Tom.
Yeah. Yeah, we got ya. We're not doing it. All right, that was episode 63 of the Friendly Geordies podcast. Thanks so
much,
guys.
That's so unfair. That was really painful.
You've been done, man.
I'm genuinely sad. I'm really depressed.
Okay. That's what people ask for, right? They're like, I want to feel like shit after the pod. Well, there you go. Episode 63 of the Friendly Geordies podcast. Goodbye from everybody.
See ya.
Could somebody taste garlic at home? Don't make me the only one that did this. Also, for the record, I'm pretty sure I'm Dracula. I had a really adverse side effects to that. I could actually be Cap. Yeah.
Okay, 3, 2, 1, goodbye.
Bye. Bye. See you until next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. See you. See you guys. Bye. Bye. See you. Thanks.
Turn the fucking thing off.